From Johannesburg to Jerusalem, the world is always changing, growing and innovating. Join Benji Shulman for the next hour as he brings you the trendsetters, the thought leaders and those creating news before it happens. Only on the New Blue Review, your favorite Jewish culture and current affairs show. Every Monday at 9 a.m. right here on 101.9 High FM.
You're listening to 101.9 Chai FM. I'm Benji Shulman, and this is the New Blue Review. Welcome to the show on the slightly load sheddy Monday morning. Hope that you are doing very, very well out there and have got all of your various important electronic devices well charged for the week ahead. We have a well charged show for you, as we do every single week. Later on, we're going to be speaking to Rob Hutchinson from Dear South Africa. We promised you a feedback on the budget last week, not knowing that there would be no budget. So we will chat to him and find out about that, and also check in and see what parts of the parliamentary process you need to be aware of and are affecting your life going forward on this particular Monday morning, the last one in Feb. We're also going to be talking about the hostage release over the weekend, in particular Avira Mengistu bringing to end a particularly appalling chapter, I think, in Israeli and Jewish history. And I was happy that he got out. I'll be giving you my viewpoint on that. But first up today, we have a guest in studio, which is very nice. We don't always have guests in studio, so it's nice to have her. And we're going to be something slightly different, maybe, sort of, from the way that you normally experience our show, but we do like to do something different. And that is because we're going to be talking about children's books. And the reason that this came about was there's been a lot of media in the last few months around children's books that have been used for very nefarious purposes. In particular, there was this one called From the River to the Sea, which was an anti-Israel book that glorifies actual terrorists who killed people. And it showed you, in some respects, the way in which children's books have changed in the last few years. When I grew up, you had classics, which I still see in some of my friends' kids' bookshelves, like The Hungry Caterpillar, which is really just, you know, a colorful book with a funny story that I think you can use to get your kid to sleep at night. But I think as technology has moved on, lots of different people, you can basically put together the key elements of a storybook, which is a good cartoonist or a good illustrator, and then a story which is simple and accessible for children. And so you started finding a whole range of different kinds of books which can cater to different needs of different children. You have ones with more religious content. You've got Julia Donaldson with her sort of feminist stuff. You've got, unfortunately, people promoting terrorism in textbooks now. But it means that there's actually a whole variety of children's books on offer. And so I thought we would bring into the studio someone. This is not what she does as a full-time thing, or maybe she does and all of her other parts of her life actually aren't. But she is a children's book enthusiast. I was told that that is the only title I'm allowed to use for her particular interview here. Her name is Louise Bick, and she's going to be talking to us about children's books. Louise, welcome to the New Blue Review. Thanks for being with us.
Benji, if I have my way, it will be the New Blue Book Review once I'm done. But thank you for having me. Very cool to be here.
Yeah, it's not the book show, but we are going to be doing children's books today. If you want to give us a message, by the way, 061-895-1019, that's the WhatsApp line. I want to know, what are your favorite children's books of whatever kind or variety, whether you used to have them when you were growing up or right now, if you've got a favorite one that's keeping a small person in your life entertained and engaged, we want to hear about it. So Louise, let's start off. I mean, where is your interest in this topic come from?
So I'm very grateful that I have my own two children, and my husband and I have always been very into books. We're a reading house. And once we realized that there's this whole world of picture books out there with kids, we became that couple who would take our time for a date night and end up browsing the kids' book section at Exclusive Books. It's a little bit, a bit of an obsession. But it's really, before this time, I was in a similar position to you, where I thought that children's books were that world of books that I read in the 80s. And the quality and content of children's books now is, as you say, so variable. But when you find good ones, they are gems, absolute gems. And that's really what I'm here to talk about today.
I mean, I've even seen, now that you start to talk about it, books in terms of other languages. I've seen books promoting like San Heritage, for example, and the parts of a book, as I put into the introduction, parts of it is the story, right? But part of it is also the illustration. And I think it's almost worth starting there, because one of the things that books typically you think about when you're talking about kids' books, they're colorful, right? There's out there. But even that is not a convention that that these books even follow these days. I mean, one of the ones that you've brought in to show us today is actually mostly in black and white.
Right. So I think that one of the things I feel about picture books is that we allow kids to move on from them too quickly. I have a daughter, she's 9, and I had a chat with her about, now that she's older and she's reading chapter books, does she miss reading picture books? And how does she feel about picture books? And her response was really beautiful. She said to me that she misses the creativity that comes with seeing the way illustrators or author illustrators describe the characters and the story through their art. And absolutely, I love picture books that extend a child from the normal bright colors that you would see in your Julia Donaldson's that you mentioned. And I think that the use of color has become an amazing tool, because for children, the way that they are seeing color in the experience of a picture book is very different to the way they're seeing color on a screen. And through books, you can use shades in such a powerful way that it can actually change the whole look and feel of the book. So to start with our first book that we'll be talking about, it's called Footpath Flowers. It's by John Arno Lawson and Sydney Smith. This book I only discovered a couple months ago. I actually bought it as a gift for a young family who suffered an inconceivable loss. And I wanted to give a gift that conveyed the essence of their mom who'd suddenly passed away. The book is about a little girl who goes for a walk through her town with her father. And the book is not shy to show the father being on his phone almost throughout the whole of the walk that they're taking through the town. What I love about this book is that there are no words. So I will admit, as a parent, you have to work a little bit harder when you read a book that has no words. Right. And I wouldn't recommend this one if, like, all you want to do is get them to bed. This is the kind of book that is going to start conversations with your children. And I wouldn't say that it's limited to small kids, but I would say that you could do a book like this from about age 5-ish. And I still think that children going up into the 9s, 10s, 11s, 12s could gain a lot from a book like this. Essentially, we follow along the path of this little girl and her dad. And slowly but surely, we realize that this little girl is a noticer. This little girl picks up on details all around her that her dad is totally oblivious to. She notices a beautiful flying bird on a man's tattoo. She notices dandelions that have grown through concrete to show their beautiful yellow flowers. And as she goes, she starts picking flowers throughout her journey. Not only does she pick the flowers, which as they go along the pages become more and more colorful against the black and white background, but she starts noticing people and creatures who need the flowers. And she spots these tiny little places along her route that she can show that she's seen and that she's noticed and that she's loved. And there's a very powerful picture of a little bird that her father just walks over. It's the body of a little dead bird. And her father just walks over the bird, and she leaves flowers on that bird to notice him.
You're listening to 101.9 Chai FM. We're talking about books today, particularly children's books, with Louise Beck. She is a children's book enthusiast. And if you're an enthusiast or even just a mild, interesting person who likes children's books, let us know. 0618951019. That is the Chai FM WhatsApp line. And we'll happily make sure that the rest of the community knows about the books that you are interested in. I'm Benji Shulman. This is 101.9 Chai FM.
This is the New Blue Review with Benji Shulman.
101.9 High FM. I'm Benji Shulman. This is the New Blue Review. We're talking today to Louise Bick. She is a children's book enthusiast. And we were just chatting before the break about Footpath Flowers, which is by John Lawson and Sydney Smith. And what's interesting about this book is, first of all, it's a lot of it is not actually in color for the majority of the book, or at least only partially. And it's really only until you sort of start to get to the end of the book that you start to see much more color. But the second thing about it is it has no words, which kind of breaks some of the conventions of storybooks. And Louise, you brought up a couple of interesting points just before the break that I wanted to explore with you in this book. Because the one thing you talked about was screens and kids interacting with them. And I wonder whether or how books these days of this kind actually compete with screens for the time and attention of kids. And with your kids or any other kids, if you give them the opportunity, are they likely to want to watch a screen or take a book? How does that fit in with how they think about their priorities?
So I think it's a family culture that you create. I've always said that if you want to raise kids who are readers, you have to have a book house. So for me, that means multiple yet-to-be-read or current reading books next to our beds, in our own bedroom. When we travel, my kids see my physical book that I take with me. They are surrounded by, I mean, we're very privileged to have a lot of really beautiful books, but I think it's also just about making that invitation to read available. So if you keep your books somewhere where your kids don't see them, it's going to be out of sight, out of mind, and you're going to pull that phone from, you know, our phones are always next to us, they're always nearby. If you have books somewhere that's in a place of, you know, you can't really miss them, they become much more available as an option, as an invitation to read. And I think that that's something that we do. You know, we have these very tidy houses, and when I say we, I do not mean me, where books live maybe in a cupboard or in a special box in the playroom or maybe somewhere tucked away in a child's room. But if you take out a few and you just have them maybe on the bed when they come in from after bath time into the room, or if you maybe have them in the back of your car, so when you've picked up your child from school, there's a book for them to just page through. It creates a culture of reaching for a book and seeing that is another option. But attention span is a very subjective to each child thing. You know, you're going to get kids who can only make it through a page or two, especially of a book without words. But slowly, slowly, if you work through and you learn to show kids how to notice things in books, you're going to catch that attention span for longer. And it's also like something that you've got to work on. You know, you're going to get some four-year-olds who will sit on your lap and go through three books, no problem. And you're going to get some four-year-olds who, after two pages, they are not interested anymore and they are climbing the wall behind you. So, you know, it's slowly developing that almost like, it's almost like reading fitness that kids are able to get through. And I think that in terms of screens, if the screen is there, they're going to pick the screen. The screen is easy.
The screen also, though, does give a certain, like, direction and kind of they're very interactive. I'm fascinated by this discussion again with this book with no words, because that also was a big part of children's books, in that they rhyme and they are, you know, they're sometimes humorous in some way, or they interact with the text. What is the experience like, particularly with a book like this, where either you as the parent having to interpret it, or are you just showing the pictures to your kids and seeing what they come up with?
So it's dependent on the age of the child. And that's why I say a book like this can extend, you know, beyond your ordinary picture book bracket of, say, 4 to about 8 or 9. I find that books like this give you a great opportunity to see what your child is seeing and see what your child is taking in. So, you know, sometimes it's if you have a quiet moment, it's great for them to be child-led. They're going to pick up things that they think are interesting. Maybe they'll notice something that you didn't see. And on every reading of a book like this, you're going to notice things that you didn't notice in the last one. So it kind of gives you as a parent insight into, like, what is interesting to your child. But again, this kind of book takes a little bit of extra effort as a parent, because you're not guided by the, you know, sing-song, rhymey pattern of the children's book words. You are kind of relying on, well, let's pick something that we're interested in. You don't even have to really follow the story. I also like that you can personalize it so nicely in a book like this. The child can be a name. You know, you can name the child your child's name. You can talk about your own neighborhood. I always change up street names in children's books. I always change whatever the street name is to Our Road. And then my kids are like, what? Is this book in Our Road, Mom? I'm like, yeah, it really is. It's in Our Road. As soon as they, you know, learn to read, they were like, oh, okay, well,
Nice try, Mom.
Exactly.
So let's move to a book completely on the other end of the spectrum. This one is called We Are One. And it, just by the looks of it, it's like a big explosion of words and color. What is this one all about?
So We Are One is a I think it should become a classic. It is a South African book. It's written by the prolific Rafilwe Moahlole, and she is a dynamite author in South African picture books, and she also does chapter books. This one in particular is illustrated by Zinelda McDonald, and I adore her illustrations. This book is the complete opposite. This is all pictures, very, very visually stimulating. And the message in this book is just so, so powerful. This book has also been translated into multiple South African languages, which is quite interesting if you've got a child who is doing something like isiZulu at school. It's quite fun to buy it in English and in another language and then go through it together and see what you can gain from that. But what I adore about this book is there are so many cool things to notice, and I love the South African flavor of this book. So for me, this is a go-to if I'm looking for gifts for children overseas, something South African that's like got a beautiful message about, you know, the distance between humans is really not that far. Very different to the kind of sort of terrorism promotion books that you mentioned in the beginning. And what I love about this book is that there is just such an amazing representation of diversity. So, you know, you have a lot of physical disabilities that you can see in the book. They're kids with glasses. They're kids who have things to assist with hearing. You can visually see different cultures. And there's a beautiful page where a group of children are doing a big hug. And you can see from the back, the little boy is wearing a yarmulke, a kippah, on his head, which, you know, religious Jewish boys wear. And it's very obvious that this is a Jewish child who's been included in the hug. And I quite like that. I think my second favorite thing about this book is quite odd, but this book has the most incredible plant life and flowers in it. So if you've got someone overseas who really misses their South African, and especially their Johannesburg cityscape, beautiful strelitzias, there's a page that's got gorgeous pincushion proteas, and then a page full of marigolds. And one of the schools in Joburg has just done a huge campaign about being a marigold, teaching kids to be inclusion in a flower bed that helps other plants grow and other plants flourish. So I particularly love this marigold page.
So that, I mean, that's, I love what you're saying here also about giving these sorts of books as gifts. I mean, people buy toys for kids all the time or whatever. But given that there actually are these wide variety of books that you can get, it's actually quite nice because you can, as you say, tailor it to a particular family, or if there's a particular kind of kid that you know has a certain kind of interest, or a family that's away, as you say, they were looking for something South African. These sorts of books can really fill a gap that is meaningful for people, particularly on the gift-giving side.
I am definitely that weird aunt who gives everyone books. Like, they know me. They know me at the bookshops when I come in. I feel that kids have a lot. But I do think that, I don't want to generalize, because I think a lot of parents put a huge amount of effort into choosing books for their kids. However, there is this notion of just kind of grabbing what's pretty and grabbing what's well-known, what's popular. And a lot of those come from cultures that are not South African and environments that don't look like home. And opening up a book that has the Joburg city skyline and you know, when you drive past a visual point of Joburg, you can say, oh, wow, that's just like in the book We Are One. And interestingly, this book has actually been republished in the States. The new name, they've published it, they've called it I Am You, a book about Ubuntu. And, you know, it's a kind of book that's very transferable. It's very universal. It's actually also been published in Portuguese. In Portuguese, it's called Nós Somos Om. It's been distributed in Brazil. And I think for somebody who's homegrown, Mtata girl from South Africa, that is a pretty amazing achievement. I mean, this is the kind of book that people are buying to understand South Africa. And what better impression to give than a book about unity? And this book isn't just about unity. I just want to it's written as a poem. And she constantly uses the language of the way that I love you is how I love myself. So she's using very simple ideas that are illustrated magnificently for children to understand the humanity of the way that the way that you are and the way that I am are the same. And one of my favorite parts is she says, to hurt you is to hurt myself. To tease you is to tease myself. To ignore you is to ignore myself. I am you.
Well, okay, that is quite special and quite, as you say, poetic, which is a nice addition. You mentioned the issue of sort of culturally relevant books, and I think one of the revolutions, sort of, I think in our community and maybe Jewish communities around the world, has been the introduction of PJ Library and this kind of quite amazing initiative where someone in America with far too much money basically subsidizes children's books to go out through schools. And this is a huge thing in our community. I know all the Jewish schools have them, and there's this constant flow of Jewish-themed books that come out for our community. And one of them is on your list as well today. So tell us about The Rabbit That Listened.
So this book is written by Corey Doerfelt, and this is one of my absolute go-to books. So as Benji said, this book has been included in the PJ Library Program Israel because this book is available in Hebrew. And I think that is wonderful that if your child is learning Hebrew at school, you can try and get a hold of this book in Hebrew and show them that Hebrew is a real language that people are interacting with every day, and the children in Israel are sitting and reading the same picture book as we are here in South Africa. So PJ Library has been an incredible addition to our personal family life. We love receiving our PJ Library books. And I think it's important to clarify that while a lot of the books are culturally Jewish and deal with the Jewish holidays, the Jewish festivals, the Shabbats, the Jewish Sabbath, many of them are universal values, universal themes of kindness, of giving, of appreciating the earth. And this one, The Rabbit Listened, is the universal theme of empathy. This book makes an incredible gift or an incredible tool if somebody young in your life has gone through a hard thing. The book is about Taylor, who is a little child. And I say little child because if you're reading to a girl, Taylor's usually a girl. And if you're reading to a boy, Taylor's usually a boy. It's a gender-neutral name, and your child can take on whatever they want Taylor to be. Taylor loves wooden blocks and builds an incredible architectural, magnificent block structure, and was really proud of it. And then the inevitable happened out of nowhere. Black crows swoop in and smash down. It says, things came crashing down. Now, when you're reading this with a child, it's easy for them to understand that feeling of the blocks being smashed down, and it helps them access whatever other traumatic event or difficult event has happened for them in a way that's extremely, extremely concrete. And it's something that they can relate to and access those feelings without necessarily have to go deeply into what those feelings are. And what I love about The Rabbit Listened is that all the different animals notice this tragic event that has happened of the blocks falling everywhere. And each one wants to react in their own way. So the chicken wants to cluck about it. The chicken wants to talk and talk and cluck and cluck. Taylor really doesn't feel like talking. And on the different animals come. The bear, oh, obviously the bear wants to roar and growl about it and be angry. And Taylor doesn't really feel like shouting. The elephant wants to remember. The elephant wants to remember things exactly where they were. Where was every single block? Let's put it back exactly how it was. And then each animal, the hyena wants to laugh about it. The ostrich wants to dig its head in the sand and just, you know, hide in a corner and not even focus on the blocks that have fallen. The snake wants to go and knock down someone else's blocks. And that's always a very interesting discussion to have with kids. And then all of the animals leave and Taylor's finally alone. And guess what the rabbit does, Benji?
The rabbit listens.
The rabbit does listen. You are right. Very good. The rabbit listens. And the rabbit just sits and listens and the rabbit is just there. And I asked my daughter how she felt about this book, The Rabbit Listened. And she said something amazing. She said to me, "Mom, I feel like I can be the rabbit. And I know how to listen." And I thought, like, that wasn't what I thought I was going to get from her at all. she really surprised me with that. But I just thought, wow, like, that is the story of empathy. And if we can raise children who know how to be empathetic and know how to just hold space, I mean, I'm sure there are many people listening right now who are battling to hold that space for adults around us with the last 10 days that we've had as a Jewish community, as a humanity. And I think being able to be the rabbit and to be able to listen is pretty powerful.
Well, if you're a rabbit listening to our show today and you have a children's book that you would like to let us know about, 061-895-1019 is the number to WhatsApp. We're talking to Louise Bick, and she is a children's book enthusiast. Louise, we've got about a minute or two left. So maybe let's just talk about quickly, where do you find all of these fantastic books? That are you just, do you just go to exclusive? Do you hunt Amazon? Where do people find books like this?
So these three I've actually bought all at local bookshops in Joburg. These three in particular were all available at Reader's Warehouse, and I have spoken to them about ordering more of Footpath Flowers. But you can get them online. I just want to mention one more book in my last minute, because this is a book that is the exact counter of the books that you mentioned when we started the show. It's called Say Something, and it's by Peter H. Reynolds. And in it, the book says, "Powerful words can be a whisper." And it's about standing up and saying something when you have a brilliant idea, say something when you see an injustice, say something. And it's a book about kids being able to have a voice and to speak up with confidence. And my best line from this book says, "Go ahead, it doesn't need to be perfect as long as it's from your heart."
Well, there you go. What a fantastic way to end a discussion about children's books. Louise Bick, been a fantastic discussion. Thank you for bringing all your insights and all your passion into children's books to us and our listeners. Might have to skip my novel this evening and go and listen to a rabbit or something.